They Dream in Gold by Mai Sinar. Read by Julia Kwamya.
Stay close to any sounds that make you glad you're alive. Hafiz. Author's note. On the day the second draft of this novel was due, a dust storm from the Sahara Desert traveled west, sprinkling cars with African dust and tinting the evening sky gold in parts of the UK and Ireland. Such a storm occurs at least once a year and illustrates a truth that otherwise remains amorphous. The reality that our world is but one place. I wanted to write a novel that could do what the dust storm does. Say a great deal about our shared experience in an organic, tangible way, and from this intention, They Dream in Gold came about. Rather than centering the external racial pressures that often drive narratives around blackness and black identity, I wanted to reckon with another important reality. The questions that arise and the transformation that occurs when different cultures within a diaspora are intimately engaged with one another. Like the storm, the exploration of these ideas in fiction revealed to me the blurriness of the lines that divide us. How the cultures we all claim such rigid and separate allegiance to are perhaps necessarily and inherently enmeshed. That origin is not only a long-established point in the annals of our history, but also an internal, living place to which we all are constantly returning in our lifelong struggle to be and know who we are. Part 1. 1. The Ingredients. Switzerland, 1969. 1. His pillow ruptures between her knees. Feathers plucked from the breast of live geese burst into the darkness of the room. She watches them by the flashes of the storm's lightning. Some descend into the gaps of the floorboards. Others wilt between the poles of the hot water pipes. They land in her palms, along her pregnant stomach, and on the meeting of her thighs. August, the third month since his departure, begins today, and Mansur and his musicians have still not returned from their three-week tour of Spain. The last of her American cash has now been converted into francs, then tokens, and emptied into the phone booth around the corner. She's memorized the flat note of the dial tone. Having not reached him since May, she is finally imagining the worst. Frantic, swollen, urinating often, she goes about naked beneath her nightgown as the night ends. For several days, she has found calm in smoking out of her small attic window and watching the summer storm rage through Switzerland. And though the storm has not left, this morning, fondling the nightstand as the sun rises, she discovers that her last cigarette is gone. With the dawn, a mix of frying tomatoes, couscous, and dehydrated fish rises from the kitchen below. Beside it, the living room downstairs houses the restaurant of Mansur's mother, Eva, and the grand opening is 2 days away. In feverish preparation, Mama Eva and her three sisters become the enemy of all rest. There has been the clattering of clay dishes, the destruction of garlic, shallots, and pepper grains with mortars and pestles, the pounding of cassava, the rise and fall of the women's frantic voices. But then, always comes the good thing, the music they play, the fiery blare of the horns, the contrary percussion. Whenever Bonnie needs to let more in, to get closer to the sound, there is a loose floorboard she can shift in the middle of her large, empty attic that will send it through. It is Cuban music, but the singers don't sing in Spanish. They sing in Wolof, Bambara, Pul, Kikongo. She once read that the founders of the genre were Afro-Cubans, whose records first came out on Victrolas some 40 years before.